Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Everyone from the area has been down to the Lake of the Ozarks at least one time in their life, and you've probably seen Haha Tonka State Park and wondered, what's the significance of that? And why is there a castle there? Well, Diane Houston and I describe the castle, what it's about, and how it got its origins right here in Kansas City. We took the girls out to the park for a walk, and they're like, we're going to go see a castle. And we get up to the top of the mountain, and I realized, oh my God, this is pretty impressive. And there's a great backstory that kind of started here in Kansas City, isn't there?
Big backstory. And it's one of those things that, as you have learned, and I kind of opened my article when I wrote about it, you know, you say, we're going to go to the lake. No one questions you. No one says, Lanawana? You know what I mean? Truman? No, everybody knows that means the Lake of the Ozarks. And it's one of those things that we have such an attachment to it. And people have heard of Haha Tonka State Park. But really, when I went to look into it, I was shocked at how little was out there. Even the state doesn't have that much, the state parks. And I thought, well, I'm going to look more into this. And it is, it's all connected, as it usually is, to these, you know, high ranking, wealthy businessmen in Kansas City. It was all his idea to build this massive castle in the middle of, you know, Ozark Mountain region before there was tourism down there, which was pretty risky if you think about it.
Well, it really is. But I also think at the time, though, there was no tourism down there. It was kind of a beautiful place to go and get away from the city and get away from everybody, even without the lake there at the time. And that's what old Bob McClure Snyder decided he was going to do, is go down there and get away from everybody. Little did he know that everybody would be flocking to him. And then all of a sudden, this castle, this house in this secluded area, all of a sudden was like in the center of like one of the biggest population bases in the state of Missouri when people are there.
It is true. And yes, I don't know if you know this, but I have unfortunately taken two classes, graduate classes, on the Ozarks and its history. And, you know, there's that kind of the idea of, like, my professor from Missouri State would, you know, kind of influence this or stress this. Are the Ozark Hill folk exceptional? Meaning that, are they this exceptional population of people who are just like, you know, isolated from everybody because of the road system? Think about how hard it is before the bridge was built across, like how hard it was to get from one side of the lake to the other. Mm-hmm. I mean, even before the lake, there were no road, like the roads were bad. There was no electricity down there. Ozarks, the hill folk, and that is an accepted term for the record, hill folk were trading goods, not with cash. So this guy doesn't just come down and buy 5,000 acres of Ozarks land, but he's going to build a castle with Scottish masons there. I mean, that was, you got to know that those hill folk, no matter where they came from or their background, looked at this like, is this guy insane? What is he doing? And he did this prior to the tourism of the Ozarks, prior to the creation of, you know, shoreline and boats and people actually wanting to go down there. He was drawn by the natural beauty of the land, which, of course, there's the caves and the natural bridge. And in the case of Haha Tonka Lake, it was like, you know, obviously isolated from everything else. And it was fed by a natural spring, 31 million you know, gallons of water just like filling through this lake that was always 42 degrees. So if I don't fish, I don't know if you know, I'm totally terrified of fish, but it's a problem. I will eat them, but I will not touch them alive. So, but fishing is a big deal, right? And And these guys would realize that Ha Ha Tonka Lake, before the Lake of the Ozarks engulfed it, basically took it away, was it had the best fish you could catch because it had like its own variety of fish. Mm-hmm. And so that when he purchased this, it also included that. So you can imagine how amazing that is. I mean, or how cool that would have been at the time. He didn't care how isolated it was. And, you know, he got to start all really much. He made his millions in Kansas City.
Yeah, he really did. I mean, and he did it in things that I think are like seemingly cool today that he was like ahead of the game on. Like he started a fancy grocery store, if you will, like the hen house of its day, right? Like the great grocery store out there. Then he started the gas company, for gosh sakes, and was able to parlay that and real estate and all this stuff. Like this guy was really, really educated back then and really kind of ahead of the curve, kind of seeing what people were going to need and want and kind of work forward and was probably doing things before anybody even realized that they needed this stuff.
Exactly. And he was using natural resources, which is interesting for someone who was who was like, look at the beauty of this nature. Now let's talk about natural gas. Mm-hmm. But in any case, yeah, Robert McClure Snyder was born in Indiana in 1852, and he moves to Lafayette County with his family in 1870. His father was a miller, pretty successful. He ends up moving after he gets married and then his wife dies. I hate to say that's kind of normal, but it was. After he had his first child, he gets married again and has three more children, all boys, Carrie, Leroy, and Kenneth. So he has a son named after him plus three other kids. And he starts out as a bookkeeper in a grocery store. In 1880, he moves to the big city. You know, forget Lafayette County, you go to the big city, which Kansas City at this point, 1880, is booming. So he comes and he starts a fancy grocery business. So it's fancy merchandise and he's selling to different wholesalers, selling to different businesses. And within 4 years, he's out of that business. And I don't even know how he knew, but he just knew that the money was to be made in the natural gas business. So I think this is great because at the time, most stoves, for those that don't understand, like it's not like they were all cooking over a open fire. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We think of the pots swinging. People that lived in cabins maybe had that, but we had stoves way earlier than people think. So in the 1880s, stoves for the most part were still coal, which, you know, not only smells, but there's a lot of issue with coal. So he ends up seeing that natural gas is the business is going. And he's smart enough to know that Kansas Cityans may not buy into this. And so he offers to give people free gas stoves before most Americans had natural gas stoves.
The original drug dealer, I guess, huh? Give the product for free, get him hooked and say, we need this. We need this.
Or like a dispensary, like we'll give you the doctor.
yes, very much so.
So anyway, yeah. So he ends up, I mean, obviously this is a cash cow. So yes, he invested up front and then made so much money that he actually merges his company with another natural gas company. Cause back then you had, believe this or not, options. There wasn't just one company. And so he merges and creates the Kansas City Natural Gas Company. He is sold out of his interest. And you think about this in the 1880s, really in the 90s, he's selling out, but $600,000. If you want to know, like in today's money, that's over $20 million. I mean, so the guy is not worried about his finances at this point. He expands his business smartly to where there is natural gas, to Kansas and Oklahoma. And so he's traveling a lot in the Midwest, which of course exposes him to the Ozarks. But he also was kind of one of those guys that wasn't afraid to invest in different businesses, which brought him to different cities, including St. Louis. And in 1898, he was promoting another new company. And, you know, at the time, the government in St. Louis and obviously in Kansas City too, used what they called a sliding scale for taking bribes. So like, how much do you want us to, you know, what do you want? What are you asking for? That's going to cost you X or whatever. Snyder ended up paying. So Robert Snyder ends up paying one guy for a vote, $50,000. And an incoming prosecutor who's like, something's going on here with the government in St. Louis, looks into it. And this guy he paid the money to admitted it happened. And Snyder was actually sentenced to 5 years in jail. He didn't ever serve. He appealed it. And, you know, money talks. We actually just had a conversation off air about this. Money does talk. And for this case, you know, he was able to appeal and win. So in 1904, he's looking for kind of a way to get away, but he also needs to be near his interests. So the Ozarks made sense to him. He buys 27 acres of land in the Ozarks. I mean, that's a lot of forest.
Yeah, I'll tell you it is that. A lot, because there's nothing down there at the time. Again, this predates the lake even being built. I mean, I think it's funny when you think about it. I mean, the lake itself is, I don't even know that it's 100 years old yet. You know, where we sit here in 1920, the lake of the Ozarks wasn't even a thing. You were literally going down there and living in the hills, right? And looking at, you know, Haha State Park Lake.
Yeah. And that's the thing. I mean, in Kansas City, or I should say Missouri, was a little bit behind on the state park thing, which we'll talk about here in a bit. But, you know, so there were no state parks at this point in history. So 1904, while California started their state park program in the 1850s, Missouri it waited way too long. And actually, you know, another, you know, side note is that the Ozarks were being depleted, which is part of the reason there was so much push to actually start the state park system, was being depleted by lumber, right? Lumber interests. And, you know, there was Badger lumber, and there was Dirks lumber, and R.A. Long lumber, like Longview, right? Or Corinthian Hall. I mean, he had the biggest lumber business in the entire United States. And it was based in Kansas City. So they're taking, you know, the natural resources. If you take the trees down, you're going to take the resources with it. And that became a big issue, which is actually what spurred finally Missouri to do something in the 1920s. And the creation of Bagnell Dam is kind of attached to that. So, but yeah, at this point, it's just, it's hill country. It's very hard to get around. And where he bought his land, the nearest railroad station, which would have been how you got down there, the nearest railroad station was 30 miles away. And now there's no road to get to where you're going. So it took hours to get there, but it was absolutely beautiful. And Haha Tonka Lake, which was part of his property, got its name Osage. It means laughing waters is what it supposedly means. So it had, you know, of course, you can imagine something that was so beautiful had Native American purposes as well before white settlement. So, you know, he buys it and has this 70-acre lake, 31 million cubic feet of water a day pouring into this from a natural spring. And he says, and he tells us, it's a quote even the state uses. He said, "Here I will spend my leisure, secure from the worries of business and the excitement of city life. I will fish and loaf and explore the caves in these hills with no fear of intrusion." So his point of doing this wasn't to wow the Ozarkers. Like,
he was just looking to get the hell out of town.
He just wanted to get the hell out of town, and he didn't want anybody to be able to find him, basically.
Which is kind of like Lake of the Ozarks really is today. I mean, you want to go down there to get out of town, get out of the big cities, and hope nobody finds you for a couple of days.
I would argue with you that it used to be that way. I think that, you know, it's kind of scary now because you can't really, I mean, the boats are so huge and it's very busy, you know, it's not like it was in the, you know, even in the 80s and 90s. I remember my first trip to the lake, you know, we got stranded at Ozark Barbecue because the boat my dad rented like wouldn't start.
Yeah.
And I have pictures of me in like the life vest looking friggin' miserable. It's like, but you know, as you said, it's such a connection to Kansas City because Kansas, it's, by the way, perfectly placed right there in the center of the state,
right?
You have the St. Louis side and you have the Kansas City side. And all of this is, you know, of course, doesn't happen until the 1920s. And like I said before, there's no electricity at the time. That didn't stop a guy who had natural gas interests. Let me tell you that. He hires 100 Scottish Masons to work on his 60-room mansion. He has a center atrium that's going to be built that's 3.5 stories tall with a natural skylight. Native stone walls that were quarried on site, hauled by mules. Because they're, again, you can't get a bulldozer up there. Mm-hmm.
I don't know how you got anything up there, quite honestly. I mean, I know when you're walking around the state park, and I don't know if you've been to the state park and has actually seen this castle in person, Diane. You know, they've got a little kind of rail line there that they show you what they use to bring stuff up the hill, but it was not easily accessible at all. But like, arguably back then, like maybe the worst place to try to build something because there was no in and outs to get to this thing.
Agree. And I think that it goes back to, but he didn't care. It was the view. That's it. It was the best view, highest up for his at that point, he originally bought 2,700 acres. He ended up with 5,200 acres. It was the best view in the entire, you know, it was the best. He was going to do the best.
Yeah. And it is a spectacular view. I mean, when you go up there and you overlook the lake and you see where that is, you can understand why he wanted to be there. But I just wish there was a way, like I look at it now, I'd be like, just build it. Call me when it's done. You know, but back then you couldn't do, you know, anything like that. You had to, I guess, had to be there and camp out and live there and watch mules bring things up the train tracks for
you. Yeah. I'm not sure. He probably hired somebody to watch out, you know, locally for him. I mean, it's that hill, and there's a lot of, you know, legends with different hills and the Ozarks and all sorts of stuff. That hill was called Deer's Leap. So like the locals before Snyder showed up, that was Deer's Leap Hill. You know, I guess there were a lot of leaping deers. I don't know. So when he built his house, he went, okay, I'll call it Deer's Leap then. Great. Mm-hmm. Fine. So he's by 1906. So this has taken, you know, a minute, a couple years. It's still not finished, but in 1906, he's invested $300,000 in this house, and it's still under construction. So, you know, whatever he goes, and he's going back to Kansas City. He's going, you know, back and forth from the lake Ha Tonka.
Right.
So he also in 1906, things really shift for poor Bob.
Stuff hits the fan here a little bit, doesn't it? You know.
Yeah, and kind of cool, like not cool, but. There's an accident, and this is one of these things that, again, I had no idea. Like, how would I know this? But at the time, he was living on Independence Avenue, and he owned two cars, which was fancy back then.
Well, I mean, to own two cars, how many people owned one car back in 1906, let alone having two, right? It shows you how rich this guy is, and that's why I'm good at my job, because I know I'm setting you up to answer that question.
Yeah. One in every 1,000 people had a car at the time. One out of 1,000, which also, in side note, we never talk about J.C. Nichols, but that's what made J.C. Nichols so integral in Kansas City, is that in the 1920s, when he's developing the plaza, he planned for parking.
Mm-hmm.
And people didn't have cars.
Which has been the biggest question Kansas Cityans have for anything and everything in this town. Where are we going to park? No matter where you go, no matter what time of day, no matter what part of town, it's all people in this town ask about, where are we going to
park? Where are we going to park? I know. And Kansas City is a lot more friendly than other cities, but that's also what chased people from downtown to the suburbs anyway, was the fact that there was no place to go. So at the time, this is in fascinating history. I just think it's really interesting. So at the time, he owned two cars, and they were both the Royal Tourist, which was a brand of car made in Cleveland. One was his first car, was a 7-passenger bright red, built in Cleveland, and it had a brass monogram on the front of it. I'm like, of course it did.
Sure,
I can picture it, you know. And then he bought a new car that summer. So this is we're talking October 1906, and so in the summer he buys a brand new dark green, 5-passenger dark green, 4-cylinder, 40 horsepower car.
That's pretty badass back in the day, though.
That would have been a Speedy Gonzales for back in those days, right? Yeah. So he actually hires, and this is something that people also don't know, chauffeurs. Chauffeurs, the most of them have a racing history. So, you know, in early racing history and things like that. So the chauffeur was actually somebody who worked for Royal Tourist. And his name was Frank Schroeder. So he not like, I'm not only not going to drive, I'm going to hire someone from Cleveland who knows how to operate this Royal Tourist to drive me around town.
But back then, think about that though. I mean, the cars are new on the market. Not everybody has one, clearly. And it did look like a machine. Like if you didn't where were you going to take driver's ed in 1906? How were you going to learn how to drive that thing? I'm sure you could have got behind the wheel and probably figured it out ultimately for yourself. But back then it was probably part of the deal. Like I'm buying this new machine. I've got to have the driver to come with it to show me how this thing operates.
And he's one of those workaholics. So he's still working and doing things downtown. And so he's not going to want, you know, he's going to want to be able to keep working. I mean, we're not like talking cell phone in the back of a limo here, but you know, he's going to want to be able to decompress. So yeah, I mean, you're right. And what's really interesting is that, you know, at the time, this is October 27th, 1906, he gets out of work late, and he actually tells his chauffeur, rather late tonight, Frank, let's get along lively. But like, step on it, buddy.
Is that what your mother tells you when you're chauffeuring her around town after a couple of wines at Jasper's? Let's go, Diane. Let's go. Let's get along lively. Yes,
let's
mother.
Let's get lively. I've got shows to watch.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So anyway, he's driving down Independence Avenue, or I should say, he's going down Admiral to Grand Boulevard, and he's increasing his speed. And let's talk about speed limits at the time, because this is great.
Oh, fantastic. These okay. weird speed limits are the best, like 8 and 12 miles per hour.
Yes.
Like, why can't we do that today instead of having everything end in a 0 or 5?
Seriously. These speed limits are great. So you have to figure, though, most people don't have cars. So you have still wagons on the road. They're not speeding down the road. So, and a lot of roads aren't paved. That's the other problem.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, yeah, the speed limit in the city of Kansas City, which was like truce to state line, the river to whatever street it was, to the south, I think at like 15th, was 8 miles an hour. Don't you dare go over 8 miles an hour.
Now, how did they know? Did they have a cop back in the day with some radar running that thing or what?
That's a good question. I think they did it by measurement, but at the same time, there wasn't a lot of, like, there was no driving age. There's no regulation yet because they don't know how to regulate yet.
Right.
You know, like, you didn't have to license to drive, you know, to ride a horse.
Right.
And
sure.
That was the car. So at this time, and this is super early, and the speed limit on the boulevards was faster. It was 12 miles an hour because they were all paved. Mm-hmm. That's the other piece. And it was also not as crowded on the boulevards. They were more residential. So he's going well over 12 miles an hour. Witnesses say it was about 45 miles an hour.
Now that's got to be moving back then, man.
That's got to feel like a car, you know, one of those motorcycles on the highway, like flying past you.
Yeah.
Like that's
yeah.
what it must feel like. Yeah. So he's going really fast, supposedly. I mean, apparently. So he turns on Independence Avenue, and near Park Avenue in front of a hotel, a 14-year-old boy with a little wagon going across the street. He's going north, you know, crossing north. I'm sure there's no crosswalks. And I mean, this kid comes out of nowhere to this driver. That's what he felt like. So the chauffeur sees the kid, shuts off the engine. I love this is his instinct. Turn the car off. Wait a minute. What are there brakes?
Back then though.
There were brakes, but the car was off. I think part of it was to just make sure the car was shut off so it wouldn't go faster. Mm-hmm. Again, cars are new. And the street had just been oiled.
Yeah, what does that mean? Like, what are they oiling the street for?
It was preservation of street. Oiling of the street would it be like laying asphalt or blacktop on top of something. Think
gotcha.
About that.
Okay.
So oiling a street, these are mechanized roads. So these are going to be, because there were all sorts of different products that they used for roads at the time. They were still figuring that out too.
Right.
So anyway, they had just oiled the street, which was essentially like resurfacing. So it would have been literally made of oil. So now he's got no chance. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So the driver actually turns the steering wheel, turns the wheels into the curb, but he's going so fast, it's too late. So he actually hits the kid, the wagon, and the kid flies 12 feet into the air and of course falls. It takes to the ground and does not live.
Right.
The car skids 75 feet past the kid. That tells you how fast he's going. Right. Well, at the time, Robert Snyder was in the back seat, and he was actually in the back seat behind the driver. But the impact of this hitting of the curb through Robert Snyder, no seatbelts, through Robert Snyder to the other side of the vehicle. So he was nearest to the curb, and you know, there's windows aren't there. So his head goes outside of it in a trolley pole, bam, right into Robert Snyder's head.
That's not the way you want to go, right? That's not the way you want to end life, by having a trolley pole going right through your head. So
bam.
He's dead. Now what happens to the castle that we have going on at Ha Ha Tonka State Park?
Yeah. So this, and by the way, that was one of the first car fatalities, not just in Kansas City, but in the nation.
In the nation. Wow. That's pretty, I don't want to say that's pretty cool, but you know, knowing one of the first car accidents where somebody died was right here in our town.
Well, wow. and nobody thought he was injured. Like, why would you think the guy in the back seat was injured? And then all of a sudden they're like, oh, his skull is crushed. Yeah. So what happens is his sons, his three surviving sons, he had one son that kind of lived a dangerous life and did not survive. He was murdered. That's another story. Mm. So his three surviving sons inherit the property and his business interests. So there was always a small push by the Missouri legislature, unsuccessfully so, shocking there, to create a state park. Like, they always wanted to do it. And the Ozarks was the one that made the most sense because, like I said, the lumber interests and things like that. Mm-hmm. So at the time, Missouri is not successful until 1923, I believe, is when they had their first park. And it was tied directly to the Fish and Gaming Department. So they first try in 1911, they raise funds, $165,000, to actually purchase Haha Tonka. So purchasing part of Snyder's property, 1911. And of course, it doesn't pass the House. So that falls. In 1920, they attempt again, this time with the Snyder estate. They were like, hey, we'll take 3,000 acres for $60,000. Okay, like, we'll take that part. And then the Snyder's like, yeah, we would consider that. But if you want the house that we like haven't finished yet, that's going to, with the 2,000 acres, that's going to be $240,000. And of course, mm-hmm. what had happened to that deal didn't pass, right? So the house still isn't finished. So in the 1920s, they actually did continue to finish it. So they did finally finish it. So there's a lot of newspaper headlines that are like the Snyder kids going to visit Haha Tonka and all that. And they actually created near the Haha Tonka Lake, they actually created a summer resort, which was kind of popular with Kansas Cityans that like to fish, called Lakeside. So they actually had like kind of a little mini Lake of the Ozarks happening on their property anyway. Mm-hmm. So in 1929, here's the deal, seals the deal. And this, of course, is in the height, going to be the height of the Depression. This is all happening too. Union Electric Light and Power Company makes a deal to build Bagnell Dam for $35 million.
That's a lot of money back then. My God, $35 million has got to be hundreds of millions of dollars today, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Like, unheard of money. And they're wanting to back up the waters of the Osage and the tributary, the Niangua, right? The river there. And they know when they do this, it's because of the hills that it's going to create these little fingerling lakes, which is what mm-hmm. we see today. And they know it's going to be about 125 miles long, and there'd be 1500 miles of shoreline. And at the time, they weren't considering like, well, should we sell shoreline property? Like, they haven't gotten there yet, you know? So this house, the, you know, Deer's Leap, if you will, at Haha Tonka was 25 miles away from Bagnell Dam, but they knew no matter what, it was going to impact their property. So they were concerned that the natural beauty would be ruined. So the power company argued that, wait, why would you even argue this? We're going to make this your land accessible by boat. You should want this.
Yeah. Yeah.
And also the company improved the roads. So like, we also gave you roads. So things are looking up for you.
Right.
They didn't care. The lawsuit. So in October 1930, 159 acres of the Snyder land was condemned to take for the Lake of the Ozarks. And at the time, they hadn't even named the lake yet. The family sues for $1 million in damages to their property. They hire former Senator James A. Reed to represent them. And the power company has 50 lawyers working on their side.
I mean, even back then, 50 lawyers. Like, where are they finding 50 lawyers at that time?
Money, 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 money. Power was important. They wanted to bring power to the people. It was going to make them money. So it was actually the largest litigation ever in Missouri for many, many years. There were 450 exhibits, 6,000 pages of evidence, and it took 8 weeks to try the case.
That is insane.
They even flew in. They even Boston. The sculptor of Mount Rushmore, Gutzon Borglum, to testify about how this was going to ruin the natural beauty of Haha Tonka Lake. Like, that's pretty impressive. So the question of the suit was, and this is a, you know, question we could debate today, does scenic beauty have a tangible value?
Yeah, I think it does. And reading about that, I'm like, I think it does have a tangible value. Yeah. But how do you put a tangible value on that? How do you set a right. number for what that tangible value is? You just can't, you know?
There's no comps.
Right. No, there isn't. I mean, for any tangible value. Well, I mean, you can say, well, things are similar here or similar there, but they're not. Nothing like that, you know?
No. Yeah, so that was the big problem. So in February 1932, the estate was awarded by the jury $350,000. That is not the million they wanted. The litigation alone, they said, cost the Snyder family $150,000. I think it was more principal for them, honestly. And I think they really did want to save what they had. I mean, they built a castle in the middle of nowhere. Like, they wanted that to not be infringed upon. So of course the power company's like, and we're not paying that. So they appealed the ruling. And in 1935, there was a second trial. And this time the jury only awarded the Snyder family $200,000. So they lost $150K on that. And about that same time, Robert Snyder, they were going to appeal it and try to take it back to court again. But Robert Snyder Jr. died of a heart attack pretty young, like in his 40s. So they just decided, they're like, we're done. You know, we own the land. We're done. We're done. So they paid the family the $200,000. So what happens, of course, is we've got this big property. What are we going to do with it? Now it doesn't serve the same purpose. So there was this lady who had actually a mental breakdown in Kansas City named Josephine Ellis. So her doctor recommended she go, you know, somewhere a little bit more remote.
Sure.
And so she moved to the Ozarks. She moved to Camdenton. So Josephine Ellis actually starts up, works with the Snyder family, and leases the house and made it a hotel for 7 years. It was just kind of known as Ha Ha Tonka. Mm-hmm. In 1942, October 21st, unfortunately, 1942, a fire started from high winds on the rooftop and just spread like wildfire. The water pressure in the old hoses, this is of course still rural Ozarks.
No way you're putting this thing out.
There's no way they can control it. They even let the kids out of school to help with the bucket brigade. I mean, it was like, there was nothing they could do. So everything went up in flames. The water tower that he had built survived, but the damage was estimated 150K. That was the end of the living conditions at Ha Ha Tonka, the house.
Right.
Or, you know, Beardsley. So in 1949, the Snyders actually started to advertising. They wanted to sell some of their land to develop a village club. This sounds very, very Lakey today.
Yes, it does. Very much so. Like, this is what you expect, right?
They were way before their times. They're like, we want to create Ha Ha Tonka Village Club. We're going to get 20,000 members and we're going to build, you know, 4,000 cabins on our beautiful land. I mean, this is super. I mean, it was exactly what ended up happening. But it kind of just failed business interests. Some of that stuff happened, but not at the, you know, quality they wanted. So in 1958, they were giving tourist visits for $1.50 a person to go see the ruins. Like, no lawsuits there, luckily. So it takes about 20 more years. 1978, finally the family, I think they're like, I mean, they're not visiting. I mean, like, the house is, you know, just a shell of its former glory. So the family still owns the property and they end up, you know, giving a sizable donation, I'm sure for tax purposes, of the part of the property. Plus they got a grant from the federal government, which was very much pushing for state parks, of over $891,000 to purchase 2,440 acres. That means there's still 3,000 acres that family was able to sell in their own terms.
Yeah.
Including the ruins. And that created Ha Ha Tonka State Park, 17 miles of trails, 5 caves, the springs, the natural bridge, and Deer's Leap, or, you know, the ruins, which you took your daughters to.
Yeah, a lot of fun. I mean, beautiful up there, just amazingly gorgeous.
It really is kind of, it's hard to imagine, because when we go to the lake, you know, you're thinking of like the bars and the entertainment and the, you know, the water skiing and the getting on the tube and hopefully not dying because of, there's always lake injuries, right?
Right.
But, you know, you're getting out there and you're not thinking about how pretty it is, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, pretty sunset. It's certainly, so maybe the Snyders were right in the end, is that the lake in some respects did destroy some of the natural beauty of the Ozarks, but it certainly did help with tourism.
Next time you go down to the lake, make sure you visit Ha Ha Tonka State Park and take the walk up to the castle and see what was expected to be one of the greatest mansions on earth, now just a kind of shell of itself. But know that the vision of that started right here in Kansas City. And without KC, who knows if the Lake of the Ozarks even exists today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law. This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.